Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
All right, let's talk about this story. Because it's, in many ways, just a story. In many ways, it's a massive story. And it's one that impacts that to a greater or lesser extent, kind of impacts all of us. And what am I talking about? It's a story that began as a simple holiday booking. It did become much broader in terms of conversation about anti-Semitism and discrimination. And I wanted to chat to the person who experienced it and the person who wrote about it. And I found it very, very compelling reading because, as I said, it resonated so greatly for me. That is Rabbi Dr. Yoni Birnbaum. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. I hope you are well.
Good morning. Good to be here. Good to be with you.
Nice to chat to you. So tell us what happened. You were booking an Airbnb in France for your family for a holiday. Give us the experience.
Yeah, I think it was essentially a very routine booking. We were looking for somewhere to go in the summer, found a place in eastern France. We went through the booking process as normal, put down and gave them a 50% deposit. And a month, 3-4 weeks after we had booked the place, I get an email from the owners saying, we noticed from your email address that you're a rabbi. And that was the only mention I made of the fact that I was Jewish. I hadn't mentioned it. It was just,
well,
they read my email address.
Mm.
Exactly. And it said rabbi. And they said, we need to ask you about your position on the Israeli government in Gaza, West Bank, Lebanon, etc. And essentially, the key point they wanted was as follows. They wanted me to declare that I was opposed to the violence and criminal actions of the Israeli government. These were their words. And unless I would do that, they would refund my deposit. They could not provide hospitality to me. So it was a purity test.
Right.
In other words, if you're a good Jew in their eyes, we'll let you in. And if not, we won't, which is essentially Jews not welcome here.
And just to clarify, you aren't Israeli. Is that correct?
Not at all.
I think it would be an okay question if you were, but...
Absolutely. I agree. Of course it wouldn't be, but the reality is I'm not. I'm fourth generation British. Most of my great-grandparents were born in the UK. This was one of the points that they made, which really sort of hit me, was the fact they said we'd ask the same question, they said, from someone coming from Lebanon or Syria. That obviously.
But you didn't come from Israel, which is interesting.
Exactly.
So it's like asking a South African Muslim their position on something that happened in Iraq because they are Muslim. It's offensive, actually. It's deeply offensive. It would be offensive to a South African Muslim in the same way that it should be. To you, the question is, when you engaged with them and getting a sense of who you are, I'm sure you did that in a fairly constructive and reasonable, rational way. Could they understand what it is that you were saying?
I think that their response was very telling. I mean, I immediately, when I saw the email, I immediately knew that my response would be along the lines of explaining why that question, to ask that question was so wrong, the prejudice at the heart of that question, how the question itself is illegitimate. And essentially, they just doubled down. They just said, no, we would ask this of anyone. They said to me, we didn't ask this specifically because you were Jewish.
Well, they did, actually.
Of course they did. Of course they did. So it made no sense.
Right.
They said we refuse to provide shelter to anyone who expresses or supports racist or fascist behavior. Now, the contradiction is so obvious.
The irony. Considering this is exactly racist behavior.
And what was coming through every line of what they wrote was the idea that we have certain liberal values and principles. And that means that in order to satisfy those principles, we have to ask you this question. which is really at the heart of, you know, Jews don't count, you know, they are.
But we've seen that, right? Liberalism doesn't apply to Jews. It doesn't apply to Jewish women who are raped. It doesn't apply to Jews who are victims of any form of terror. It just doesn't.
Yeah. And it's and this is exactly what, you know, this is the thing, you know, when you see a response like that and you see that there are people out there who believe that it is completely legitimate. And on the contrary, it would be wrong for them not to ask me because I'm Jewish. Mm. I think this is what we're up against. And this is what, and the reason why I decided to tell this story was because I feel that people need to, number one, know that it's happening. The wider public need to know that it's happening. And number two, that I hope that people who, because if it's happened to me, it's happened to others, that they could perhaps learn how to respond. You know, I found I thought this was an effective way to respond. I particularly referred in my response to the fact that my grandfather fought for 6 years in the British Army. So the liberation of Europe was the result of the efforts of people like my grandfather. Mm. You know, you're able to live in you're in comfort in Europe because of the, you know, what our sort of grandparents' generation did. And so the you know, the chutzpah to turn around to sort of say that we won't allow you, you know, we won't provide you hospitality.
And in fact, one of the other things you mentioned was they had connections with the Netherlands, and you know, we know, unfortunately, the tremendous number of percentage-wise of Jews that were murdered during the Holocaust because of the behavior of the broader Dutch community.
Yes.
And certainly you made the point that you weren't asking them to distance themselves. I mean, it becomes an impossibility, really. This is where this whole intersectionality leads us, is that, you know, before you have a conversation with anybody, you need to have a four-page disclaimer, because otherwise it becomes impossible to actually just communicate.
Yes, exactly. And I think that really was the point. I think the point that I hope people understand, those, you know, from reading the story, is how there is nothing new about this, sadly, in terms of the different iterations of anti-Semitism. So medieval Europe, as I wrote in the piece, we had to prove sort of religious purity through conversion, and the Nazis demand racial purity, etc., etc. And here we have to, once again, Jews are expected to declare and you know, express a certain viewpoint to be accepted in society. Yeah. And that's deeply worrying. That's the you know, and I do believe, by the way, you know, there are good people out there, and I've had a lot of incredibly positive responses, and people, you know, decry this and say this is horrific, this is awful. But that's why we need to talk about it, because it's going on.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated by that, because we all have those situations, and I find when I do, I don't always, and I talk about a lot of things, but maybe I have them also more than most, because I'm in the front lines of media. But the problem is we often don't. We just kind of deal with something, and then it becomes very dangerous, because we almost internalize this anti-Semitism and this Jew hatred in a way that it starts to define or govern our own behavior.
Yes, exactly. And I think the key point as well is, if broader societies that we live in, because this is not just obviously a British, European, South African, you know, need to come to a realization that this type of behavior and these attitudes fundamentally undermine society in general. It is not about just the Jewish community. It is about a completely misguided understanding of how a positive you know, society should operate towards its citizens.
So here's my concern, and I often say this about South Africa's government, the ANC, and I think it would apply to your case as well, and I think it applies to many cases, is I believe that they would pass a lie detector test if asked if they were anti-Semitic, and that they would answer no. And I think that they would pass the test because they believe it themselves. because they have been so flooded with a certain type of thinking, rhetoric, prejudice, that it's almost that they don't realize it. Give me your thoughts on that, and then give me your thoughts on how you think, if at all, you could have changed the view of this particular person, you know, and we can extend it to anyone else.
I think the point you make is a very important one. But again, I think there are many historical precedents for it. Prejudice is usually comes where the people who are prejudiced against someone else are often convinced that they're right. They're convinced that they're correct. They're convinced that they are they have adopted a position which is rational, which is sound, which makes sense. And you know, this was there were many Germans, Nazi Germans, you know, in the Nazi era, who were convinced that there was a moral case for the destruction of the Jewish people. And that sounds completely absurd and bizarre, but the fact is the human mind is capable of incredible things, right? Believing all sorts of things. And I think therefore the healthiest attitude we can have towards that is acknowledging it and understanding that it exists, and to educate people, to go and talk to people and explain to them why this is so wrong. Because the only way is to change the hearts and minds of people, to help them understand what it looks like from our perspective, so that they, you know, understand how this sounds to a Jew. that's a really important part of it. And I think once you do that, you begin to help people.
Oh, we seem to have Oh, wait, there we go. Can you hear us now?
Sorry, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Sorry, did you hear that?
If you can just repeat your last sentence.
Sorry. I think the education here is critical. If we want to change the hearts and minds of people, I think we need to tell stories like this. We need to, when people read this and they see that email that I received, which is why I reproduced the entire thing in the piece on it. People, they look at it, and you look at it once, you read it again, you think, so hold on a second, would any other people, any other ethnic group, anyone receive this, you know, be demanded to sort of pass this test? You know, you have to satisfy us, otherwise we will not accommodate you. And then people, I think the next step, I would hope, is people look at it and say, yes, this is prejudice. This is prejudice. So. This is taking a group and saying, you know, because you are part of this group, therefore you need to satisfy us in a certain way. And I think therefore the fact that we acknowledge that people honestly, that there are people who honestly, as you say, would pass a lie detector test and honestly think that their position is justified, that shows why it's important to educate people.
Absolutely.
And that was the purpose of telling this story.
Well, I think you know. Well, I'm going to end by asking you the most Jewish question possible. Did you get your deposit back?
Yes, I did. And I did. And you know something about that? That was something which, again, it was all the part of it. You know, from the beginning, when they wrote the email, they said, we will, of course, refund your deposit.
Right.
You know, we're not taking money.
Right.
We are upright, you know, upright moral people.
Yeah.
Also, you know, we're
racist. We're not thieves. Those are two very different things. Exactly. We do need to leave it there. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for sharing the story widely. I think it's so important. Rabbi Dr. Yoni Birnbaum talking to us about a series of events. Thank you. That's where we leave it. Wishing you Shabbat Shalom.